It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Saturday, December 10th, 2022. I'm Jared Halpern. An American basketball star is released from a Russian prison, but it came with a cost.
But we did a national security assessment, as we would normally for any prisoner exchange.
And it's deal-making season on Capitol Hill with a major spending bill and a race for Speaker of the House unsettled.
Kevin McCarthy, if he is Speaker, is going to have a bear of a time passing any bill through the House.
This is the Fox News Rundown from Washington. Brittany Griner is back on U.S. soil. The WNBA star was released from a Russian penal colony this week and flown home as part of a prisoner swap that saw the release of a convicted arms dealer nicknamed the Merchant of Death. At the White House, President Biden, standing next to Brittany Griner's wife, Sherelle, celebrated the homecoming.
Brittany is an incomparable athlete, a two-time Olympic gold medalist for Team USA. She endured mistreatment and a show trial in Russia with characteristic grit and incredible dignity. She represents the best America, best about America, just across the board, everything about her.
Griner was detained at Moscow's airport in February, police said at the time, with hashish oil. She pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 9 years in prison. Her release did not accompany the release of Paul Whelan, a former U.S. Marine jailed in Russia on espionage charges the U.S. says are phony and politically motivated. President Biden says the work will not end to get Paul released. Still, the Biden administration defends its decision to swap arms dealer Victor Boot without the release of Whelan. I spoke with the National Security Council's John Kirby about that decision, the risk involved, and the prospects for more Americans detained in Russia to come back home.
Since her detention 9-10 months ago, and even before that, in terms of Mr. Whelan, we had been trying to explore opportunities with interlocutors in Russia for their release. And that work was constant. And there were times when the discussions seemed to be more fruitful than others. You might recall over the summer, we basically said that we had made a serious offer and Russia kind of went silent for a while. So I don't want to convey that, you know, on every single day, there was robust discussions going on, but the overall strategic effort stayed very consistent over the last year plus. As we got into the fall and we made some alternative proposals, we explored some different ideas with the Russians, things began to solidify so that last week it really became apparent that the deal before us was a deal between Brittany Griner and Victor Boot. And that was as far as we were able to go.
At that point, Russia said that Paul Whelan was not going to be a part of any emerging deal.
At that point, because they treat Paul separately, the only option to get even one of them home was this option. And it was never a choice of, hey, we want Boot back. You pick. You Americans pick. Is it going to be Brittany Griner or is it going to be Paul Whelan? That was not the way it was proposed. It was, we want Boot back and we'll give you Brittany Griner in return. And that was the deal. That was as far as we were going to be able to go.
I heard the president, and you just said it too. I heard the president this week say that for whatever reason, the Russians are treating Paul differently. What does that mean?
It's related to the espionage charges that they have levied against him, which, of course, are a sham. He's not a spy. He's not guilty of any espionage. But that's what they charged him with and convicted him on. And for that reason, they put him in a special category. And it's always been that way. I mean, Mr. Whelan himself said as much in interviews he's given in the last 24 hours or so. He knows he's being treated separately and distinctly because of those charges.
Let's talk about the decision to release Victor Boot? This is a bad guy. He was one of the most wanted fugitives in the world when the U.S. arrested him back in 2010. He was only halfway through a 25-year sentence that just charged him, accused him of essentially having U.S. blood on his hands. He was selling weapons to terrorist organizations. Why was he a part of sort of these negotiations on the U.S. side?
He wasn't a part of our negotiations on the U.S. side. I mean, we want Brittany and Paul back, right? The Russians are the ones who floated Mr. Boot as their objective. And they can speak to the reasons for that. Look, we recognize this is a dangerous man. He wouldn't have been put in jail if he wasn't for all those legitimate reasons. He was, you know, I think it's important to remember a couple of things. He wasn't sentenced to life in prison. He was going to get out in 2029 anyway. So his freedom was coming. It was just not coming now. We're not doing backflips here that Mr. Boot is a free man. But we did a national security assessment, as we would normally for any prisoner exchange. And we believe that having done that assessment, that we are going to be able to continue to look after our national security interests going forward with Mr. Boot on the street. Now, look, Mr. Boot's got some decisions he has to make. You know, I don't know what, we don't know what he'll do going forward. But if he decides to go back to his former trade, if he decides to put Americans at risk, if he decides to challenge our national security, then we're going to hold him to account.
Let me talk a little bit about the prospects now for Paul. What are those? I mean, are these lines of communication? We heard, I think President Putin said on Friday that additional prisoner exchanges are on the table.
Well, we'll see.
Is he referring to Paul Whelan?
You'd have to ask Mr. Putin.
Okay.
I mean, look, actions, not words. So, we heard what Mr. Putin said. Now let's see what he does. What we're going to do and what we've communicated to our Russian counterparts is we're going to stay at this. We're still going to negotiate for Paul. We want him home now. He shouldn't have one more day there. And with that sense of energy, we are going to continue to go after negotiations for his release.
Are these talks, as it relates to prisoner swaps, prisoner exchanges, really the only diplomatic channels open right now with Russia?
Oh, my goodness, no.
I mean, because, I mean, it seems like it's been really icy, obviously, with the invasion. And
No, my goodness. I mean, look, Secretary of Defense has, in not-so-distant past, talked to his counterpart. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs can speak to his Russian counterpart. We have a deconfliction line that we use with the Russians with respect to Syria. We've got a hotline available to us, a deconfliction line for in NATO's eastern flank. I mean, there are multiple ways in which we can communicate directly with the Russians.
So, I mean, the reason I asked that question is, are these talks as it relates to prisoner swaps or prisoner exchanges, getting Americans out of Russia, separate and apart from any of the talks going on to try and end the conflict in Ukraine?
Yeah, we need to be careful that we don't try to extrapolate from the discussions to get Brittany home and Paul any sort of meaningful change or progress with respect to speaking to Russia about the war in Ukraine or about potentially ending that war in Ukraine. These are separate and distinct channels. What we did through our Russian interlocutors, largely that they on the Russian side were largely in the intelligence world, was really negotiate this release and again trying to negotiate for Paul. It is that effort is separate and distinct from how we're engaging the Russians with respect to what's going on in Ukraine. And to be clear, just to make this definitive, we are not talking to Mr. Putin or the Kremlin about a negotiated settlement in Ukraine. As the president has said, nothing about Ukraine without Ukraine. We're not going to have those discussions unless we know that Mr. Zelensky is ready for those discussions to start, and he has to be the one at the negotiating table with the Russians.
You raised a lot of concern this week about what you, I think, described as a full-fledged military defense partnership between Russia and Iran. I know that the two have sort of been collaborating with each other, the drone sales and things like that. But has this escalated now to a new kind of troublesome alliance?
We are deeply concerned about what we are seeing, this a burgeoning, deeper, as I've said, full-fledged now defense partnership between Russia and Iran. Not only is that bad for the people of Ukraine, because Iran is continuing to provide drones. We think that they're considering selling ballistic missiles, all of which would be used to do what? Kill Ukrainians. Just let's be honest about that. But also now that support's flowing the other way, where Russia is providing assistance and perhaps even some military components to Iran. So yes, this is a concerning development. We're talking about now what is becoming a potentially full-fledged defense partnership. Not only bad for the people of Ukraine, it's bad for the Middle East, for Iran's neighbors, because Iran could potentially profit off this defense relationship to develop lethal capabilities of their own, or more lethal capabilities of their own.
You said that the United States would use all of the tools available to try and disrupt this. It seems to me that Russia and Iran are maybe the most sanctioned countries in the world right now from a U.S. perspective. What other resources and tools are available to the United States?
Certainly, sanctions remain on the table. Yes, you're right. There are a lot of sanctions in place on both countries. But look, we just levied more sanctions on the Iranian regime with respect to human rights abuses. So you can still explore additional sanctions. We can look at more strict export controls to deny Iran the ability to get some of the advanced technologies they need for some of these systems. And we're going to be talking with allies and partners as well with the UN about additional measures that we might be able to take. We're also going to be just, I don't mean to blather on here, but we're going to be talking to countries that could be exploited by Russia or Iran with respect to the transit of some of this material. So there's a range of options available to us.
Let me finish with this, and just sort of more broadly speaking now, as we enter the winter months, your expectation for what that looks like in Ukraine, what the U.S. intelligence assessment is for what that means for the Russian war in Ukraine.
I think clearly as the weather turns worse, it's going to be more difficult for both militaries to conduct particularly ground operations, but even some air operations. The ground's going to get muddy and soggy and wet, and the overcast is going to make it hard to do some air operations. I want to be clear, though, while we think some military operations will be impacted, maybe even slowed and curtailed, it doesn't mean that the war is going to stop. And we shouldn't fool ourselves that think, well, the winter's coming, so there's not going to be any more combat in Ukraine. I don't think anybody believes that, certainly not the Ukrainians. But we do expect that the weather conditions will certainly have a deleterious effect on both militaries' ability to maneuver and to operate. We would fully expect that the Russians would take any pause, any slower momentum to try to boost up their capabilities so that when the weather got more permissive, you know, to continue their operations in Ukraine. So nobody's expecting that the winter months portend some end of the war or some new window for a radical change here. What we're going to do, regardless of what the weather is, we're going to continue to provide Ukraine the security assistance that it needs. We just announced another $275 million worth of security assistance to help Ukraine with their air defense needs, as well as their artillery and rocket system needs to continue the fight.
John, important issues. I appreciate you taking some time to go a little deeper with us.
Anytime. Happy to do it.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
Let's make a deal. It's the time of year Congress, the president, Republicans, and Democrats are facing a few deadlines that require the age-old skill of legislating. Dare I say, compromise. Earlier this week, the House overwhelmingly approved an annual defense policy bill, clearing the way for about $850 billion in military spending in policy directives. It came together when Democrats dropped objections to a provision requiring the Pentagon to rescind a COVID vaccine mandate for troops. Republicans argued that provision was a detriment to morale, recruitment, and retention. Military leaders disagreed. The bill is also free of other non-defense policy issues that both parties
parties had looked to include, while also boosting pay for military personnel and overhauling the military criminal justice system for sexual assault investigations. But another major deadline looms, keeping the government open beyond next week. And if that weren't enough, Kevin McCarthy, the House Republican leader, is trying to make deals too, with an expectation of winning the Speaker's gavel on January 3rd. As Chad Pergram, my colleague covering Capitol Hill, as Fox's congressional correspondent, says, it's about the math. But right now, it's more like solving an algebra problem.
The deadline to fund the government is the 16th. Here we are. You know, I talk about beware of the Ides of August, and I talk about the other time, the worst time
the
of the year,
of December,
most wonderful. Christmas. Here we are, Christmas. Okay. So the government's going to shut down next week if they don't fund the government. So what they typically do is they approve an interim spending bill for a few days or right before Christmas, the 21st, 22nd is what was suggested to me, and fund the government then, and then do the big omnibus, which would give new money and give the Pentagon and HHS and the Department of Education, everything they
would
want.
Get more than they currently have. Yeah.
But if you do it for a year, which you can do, I mean, a CR is a CR. It runs for whatever reason. Then that means that the old money at the old levels is still running until September 30th of next year. And that's kind of the risk that both sides are playing.
So,
and this is why Nancy Pelosi, and I was trying to ask the speaker this, do you think that Republicans are talking out of both sides of their mouth? Because they say, oh, let's just do a temporary bill into next year. And the Pentagon says that's the worst possible thing we could do because we can't plan for readiness or anything else.
But what's the incentive for Republicans who are about to take over control of the House of Representatives to go along with such a long-term spending bill if they're not getting sort of major concessions in that? You know what I mean? Like, what would be the incentive to just extend government funding for several months when you're about to play a much bigger role in crafting government funding bills?
Jared, since they won't say it in front of a camera or a microphone, I will. The bottom line is this. They know, and the dirtiest secret in Washington is that if you punt this to January with an interim spending bill that runs out middle of January, 1st of February, even March, something like that, Kevin McCarthy, if he is Speaker, and we'll underscore the if here, and we can talk about that too, is going to have a bear of a time passing any bill through the House. Now he's kind of putting this imprimatur on there saying, well, if we have the House, we'll pass our bills and put our stamp on spending. He's technically right. But pragmatically, you know, he's got this 5-seat majority. He's got a lot of people who don't want to vote for anything. So they're not going to vote for that. The Democrats probably wouldn't help them pass the type of bill they want. So the dirty little secret, and I'm going to whisper this, Jared, is that he secretly wants, and most Republicans want, any sort of spending bill to keep the government open so they don't have to deal with it next year, because they know that this is going to be a crisis because the Republican House probably can't pass a bill to keep the government open. And they would face an immediate crisis with a potential government shutdown. January 15th, at it, Kevin.
Yeah. Well, but not only that, I mean, they also know that whatever they pass is unlikely to get passed in the Senate, which now has total Democrat control. And so, yeah, I mean, you're right. I guess that would be the incentive there, is just moving it off the table. Let's talk about Kevin McCarthy. You know, this is not something that he has to count on until January 3rd. And a lot can happen between now and January 3rd.
Yes, absolutely.
You have in your reporting that there are at least 5 hard no's from Republicans for Kevin McCarthy. What number do you have?
And let's be very careful about what those 5 Republicans have said. They have said they cannot support Kevin McCarthy. Now, some have put a little bit of an escape hatch in there. There's a little bit of difference here and there. Some have been a little more declarative. Andy Biggs has been pretty declarative.
Well, he's announced
Bob
that he's actually going to run against Kevin McCarthy. That's pretty declarative.
Now,
putting your name forward is pretty declarative.
Yes. He's never dropped out. You know, he just didn't get the Republican nod in the conference.
To the floor. Yeah, he's going to present himself on the floor and see if anybody votes for him. And we've seen that in the past. Democrats have challenged that. Famously, several years ago, Tim Ryan, who just lost the Senate race in Ohio, put his name on the floor to challenge Nancy Pelosi. It was unsuccessful, but we've seen that play out before.
Yes, you're absolutely right. But here's what happens. You need an outright majority of the entire House of members voting by name. In other words, they cast a ballot for somebody by name. Now, if you have, and Andy Biggs says there's 20 or 30, you know, Republicans who don't support McCarthy. Now, let me give you a scenario. We often talk about it being the math. Well, Jared, this is about the algebra. This is the congressional algebra. Okay, so really put on your thinking caps for this one. Okay, so the House will start at 434 members because there is one vacancy. Don McEachin, the Democrat from Virginia, who won re-election, died. So there's a vacancy there. So what the breakdown will be in the new year is 222 Republicans and 212 Democrats. Okay. So the winning number, if everybody votes, is still 218.
Right.
You can't have half a person. So it has to be 218, okay, if all 434 vote. Now, let's say those 20 Republicans don't vote for somebody by name. They vote present on the floor. So in other words, those votes don't count toward the total. So that takes the Republicans, that takes McCarthy from, at a minimum, from 222 to 202. So Hakeem Jeffries, who is on track to be the Democratic minority leader, say all Democrats vote for him, he gets 212. Well, in the scenario of what I've painted for you here, that the threshold has dropped down into the low 200s. So Hakeem Jeffries with 212, that is an outright majority of the entire House of those casting votes for someone by name. Hakeem Jeffries, and this probably won't happen, would be the speaker. But that demonstrates to you how the math, the algebra, would work.
But the scenario you just laid out is the biggest argument going for Kevin McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
But
I mean, that's what he's going to tell members.
Yeah, that's right. And that's essentially what he has said. And it's not, and this is where maybe this goes two, three, four rounds. You know, back in 1923, one century ago now, they voted nine times until they reelected Frederick Gillette from Massachusetts to be the Speaker of the House. You and I have talked about our friends Hal Cobb and Nathaniel Banks in the mid-19th century. In the case of Banks, it took two months. So what happens is the House votes and votes and votes and votes again. Now, two little nuggets on this. The interesting thing is that the person who presides over the House until they get a speaker and is the de facto officer of this branch of government is the Democratic clerk of the House, Sherrod Johnson. So she presides over all of this until you. So the first thing you see with the new Republican majority is they can't get a speaker, and you got a Democrat who's in charge, Sherrod Johnson, who's the Democratic appointee. They'll put in their own clerk of the House once they get control. That's the first thing. But what happens is members, they want these members, they want to wear them down. And you'll have K Street lobbyists call them. You'll have a naughty and nice list created. It is Christmas time, after all. These people will be on the naughty list.
Committee
positions. Yeah. Absolutely. But here's the problem, is that McCarthy only has this, you know, slight majority. That naughty list can't be too big because he can't lose anybody.
Well, so let me ask this, because I know this has been written about, and I am not somebody who thinks this is particularly likely, but I want to get your take on it, that it is known, maybe not well known, that you do not have to be a member of the House of Representatives to be Speaker of the House of Representatives. That's never happened. There has always been a member of the House to serve as Speaker, but it's not a rule.
Right.
And you have said that there have been some moderate Republican names that have sort of floated up that could be potentially sort of they get Republican and Democratic votes. And you mention a couple of soon-to-be former members of the House, John Katko from New York, Lee Zeldin from New York, and Fred Upton from Michigan. Chad, there is no chance that a non-member of the House becomes Speaker, right?
I have had very credible members of this institution. If this, let's say we get into the Nathaniel Banks scenario in 2 months or something. Oh, yeah. Now, again, unlikely, yes, unprecedented. Okay. But, you know, Jared, hearing about the, you know, starting, you know, there was talk last year about, you know, President Trump, you know, that he wanted to be
Speaker.
I remember. Because
he wants another job, Chad.
Yes, but there was talk about him, you know, kind of hinting at that. Now, again, it would be unprecedented to have that, but you can't beat somebody with nobody. And until the somebody arrives on the scene, we don't know who that could be. So that's where some people think, yeah, it's eventually going to be Kevin McCarthy, probably. This is where Fred Upton, and this was on CNN, and this was a great line the other day. He said, you know, the conservatives who are really against McCarthy, these Freedom Caucus folks who say, oh, no, it's not. They said, we have somebody waiting, you know, in the wings. And he said, it's like the Von Trapp family singers, you know, in the, at the Salzburg Music Festival, and they keep calling for them, you know, to come out on stage, and they're not there, you know, and it's the same thing that they're, the Freedom Caucus is doing here. There's nobody there. That we don't know who this candidate, this mystery candidate is that they have. So I wouldn't rule anything out because this is pretty dicey right now.
All right,
and
I
this could go
more
on for a while. But well, let me say this. This is important. They call the roll in the House alphabetically.
Yes.
And so if you're somebody who's going to be a no and going to vote for somebody else on the House floor during that speaker vote and your name begins with A, so you feel a little bit like you're walking the plank because you got these guys down here whose names begin with W and Y. And if they, and if they're going to hang you out to dry, you know, that's a because these guys get cold feet. You know, they go through, you know, those guys have the advantage at the end of the alphabet here. So we've had threats before like this. This feels a little bit different. The permutations are a little bit different. It's probably more risky because, again, this has been this is the problem that McCarthy has. You know, he's even if he ever gets the votes to be speaker, he does not necessarily have the votes to govern. And that might be a more important conversation going into the new year. And that brings us back to why they don't want a short-term spending bill.
It all comes together, and that's why it is like algebra, because you mention it's not just numbers, it's the letters that the last name start with. So
very well said.
There you go. Chad Pergram. Boy, these are going to be fun conversations we have over the next few weeks. I'll talk to you soon.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, Jared, as I always say on Capitol Hill.
Tomorrow on the Fox News Rundown from Washington, we have finally closed the book on the 2022 midterms with Democrat Raphael Warnock winning re-election in Georgia. We'll talk with Kyle Condit from the University of Virginia's Center for Politics about what we've learned from those results. And Congress is increasingly interested in regulating the cryptocurrency market. Jessica Rosenthal looks at one proposal from Wyoming Senator Cynthia Lummis. Until then, I'm Jared Halpern. Thanks for listening to the Fox News Rundown from Washington.
Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.